This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
I'm Nicola Coughlan, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Youngest Heroes. Rebellion, risk, and the radical power of youth.
She thought, right, I'll just do it. She thought about others rather than herself.
12 stories of extraordinary young people from across history.
There's a real sense of urgency in them, that resistance has to be mounted, it has to be mounted now.
Follow History's Youngest Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Geht es Ihnen nicht auch auf die Nerven, wenn ein Unternehmen mit all seinen Auszeichnungen prahlt? Uns auch. Fühlt sich so aufgesetzt an, oder? Mit uns von Kapital.com können Sie sich also wieder Ihrem Podcast widmen. Übrigens haben wir bei den 2024 Online Money Awards die Auszeichnung Best Overall Trading Plattform erhalten. Oh, ups. Kapital.com. Viel besser in Sachen Trading als in Sachen Werbung. CFDs sind mit einem hohen Risiko behaftet. 70% der Anleger verlieren Geld.
Hello, I'm Luke Jones. Welcome to the documentary from the BBC World Service. In BBC OS Conversations, we bring people together to share their experiences. And this time, we hear from people living through the fires in Los Angeles. It's been described as one of the costliest natural disasters in American history. Our guests describe fleeing the advancing fires and watching their houses burn. We also hear how communities are coming together to help those who are displaced. And firefighters explain to us the extent of the challenge.
You can't even have people safely in that operational zone with 70, 80, 90 mile an hour winds blowing because it's a fire rainstorm. That's truly what it is. And there's not enough water on the planet that can shut that down.
The Pacific Palisades district of Los Angeles includes some of the most desirable beachfront real estate in the world, a favourite of Hollywood celebrities and the likes. Today, the famous Pacific Coast Highway in Malibu is lined with burnt-out ruins. These latest fires in the city broke out on the 7th of January, fueled by dry conditions and, at times, hurricane-strength Santa Ana winds. They spread rapidly. As well as the Palisades fire, the Eaton fire near Pasadena and the smaller Hearst fire have destroyed tens of thousands of acres and thousands of homes and businesses. Other areas of the city, too, have been blanketed in plumes of thick black smoke. As I record this on Friday lunchtime here in London, in many areas of Los Angeles, the fires are still burning and the death toll continues to rise. For our first conversation, we're going to hear from some of the people forced to flee their homes as the fires advanced. During our live daily OS show, which we broadcast from within the BBC newsroom, we brought together Teddy, whose well-known Real Inn restaurant in Malibu was destroyed, and Lily, who had to leave her home in the middle of the night.
I was on my way home from visiting someone in the hospital and thinking, okay, well, we might need to pack a bag and see what happens. I didn't even get to my front door when we got the first alert to prepare in case we need to evacuate. I went inside and as I was starting to get things together, I got the leave now order. I had my bag in my hand and I was trying to put things in it, like a toothbrush, things like that. And I read the message 3 or 4 times because I thought I was misunderstanding that it's not possible to get these orders that quickly.
We had just gotten news that we lost our restaurant and saw a video of it burning. And then we looked up on the ridge and we could see that the red sky started to move closer, and then we could start to see flames coming towards our house. And we've, you know, evacuated over the years from different fires. But the winds this time, close to 100 miles an hour, and switching back and forth and sending the embers, we realized my husband usually does not like to evacuate. He has fire hoses and a pump in the pool, but he said, you know, we realized that if the firefighters can't fight this, we certainly can't. It feels a little like Armageddon.
I had my front door open and the neighbors started coming out of their houses and we were all kind of asking each other, did you get that same message? Because nobody, it didn't make sense to any of us. And we have a fire station nearby. A few of us went to the fire station, and we were told, yeah, if you can leave now, you must.
The restaurant was there for 36 years. We are a small family-owned operation. My husband and I are sort of the mom and pop. Our employees, a lot of them have been with us for over 30 years. They start as busboys and end up as head cooks. And those are the people that I am just devastated for, because we were their livelihood. And trying to put that back is going to be difficult. One thing we have realized through this is we landed in an Airbnb down in Mar Vista with our kids, a couple of our sons, and looking around the room, I just went, okay, you know, what really matters is in this room. All the rest of it is it's okay.
Yeah, I'm with you, Teddy. It is just stuff. We told the firemen at the station in our neighborhood, we wanted them all to come back, and we don't care about our houses if it's between that and them. But it took a lifetime to build what we have, and you can't just put it all back together again.
Lily and Teddy. Let's hear next from Kelly and her boyfriend, Alec. My colleague Mark Lowen brought them together with DJ. He had to leave his home with his family.
About 8 o'clock at night, we were watching the damage in the Palisades fire and the Eden fire start out in Pasadena. And like lots of people just going, oh my goodness, this is awful. This is terrible. We're looking outside our door to make sure things are okay. And then the wind started picking up right by us. And before we saw anything on the news or had any alerts or anything, there was someone honking their horn outside of our complex, really annoyingly. So I said, I better go outside and check that out. And there were people yelling, we got to go, we got to go. I looked up over the hill by our complex and it was all aglow. And you could tell the fire is really close. And that's when I ran back inside and got all the kids up who had already gone to sleep and said, we've got to get out of here. We got to leave. And then all the neighbors started coming together and people started helping each other out, making sure we were out of there. But it happened so quickly.
Do you know what has happened to your home?
Yeah, there's been only minimal structure damage through our fire. So I know two mobile homes a couple miles away from us were damaged. But our home, as far as we can tell, I have Ring cameras and things that are on it, is totally fine. And so that fire is really not that bad. And I think they're doing a fine job containing it. It's a completely different story than the Palisades fire in Malibu. And in Pasadena, I know several families who have lost homes, and the scenes out of there are just unbelievably heartbreaking.
Yeah, it's horrific. There was no time really to pack anything up. Yeah.
It was just really devastating. I mean, you know, the fire came on so fast and so strong. The air was so toxic, even with masks. There was no oxygen, couldn't breathe. We were basically engulfed in flames and eventually were forced out because it just was a totally different atmosphere.
But you ran back into the house, the burning house, Alec, to get some of Kelly's belongings.
Yeah, I left and then I came back and, tried to put out some of the fires outside with the hoses, and there was nothing we could do.
The mass of the fire coming on was just like a wall, and like the person before was saying, DJ, like the glow of the hill, you just see the whole sky igniting bright orange, and it's like, I didn't have time to pack much up, so it's stuff like, I didn't pack even like a t-shirt really. I'm just packing sentimentals, and it's, you don't think to pack the basics like shampoo, t-shirts.
Everyone's in the same spot. Everyone's telling stories of where they had to evacuate from, what happened, how did they get out, what did they get. There's a little bit of a shell shock on people's faces, but some camaraderie of how are you okay?
How are your children?
There were a lot of tears the night when we were rushing out. And it's, like a movie scene trying to go, I'm really living this right now, but we got to get out of here. I think they're okay now. And the fact that we haven't lost a lot of our things is somewhat comforting, but they're doing all right.
DJ, and you also heard there from Kelly and Alec. We wish them all well, and we do plan on catching up with them in the coming weeks or months to see how things are going. I'm Luke Jones, and this is BBC OS Conversations from the BBC World Service.
I'm Nicola Coughlan, and for BBC Radio 4, this is History's Youngest Heroes. Rebellion, risk, and the radical power of youth.
She thought, right, I'll just do it. She thought about others rather than herself.
12 stories of extraordinary young people from across history.
There's a real sense of urgency in them, that resistance has to be mounted now.
Follow History's Youngest Heroes wherever you get your podcasts.
Der Handel an den Finanzmärkten kann eine einsame Angelegenheit sein. Wenn Sie also wissen möchten, wie man den Dunkelmodus auf Ihrer Plattform aktiviert oder wie Sie auf Ihr Konto einzahlen können, dann ist es gut, wenn Sie mit einem echten Menschen sprechen. Bei Kapital.com sprechen unsere Teams Deutsch, Französisch, Italienisch, Spanisch und viele andere Sprachen. Setzen Sie sich mit uns in Verbindung und wir helfen Ihnen gerne bei der Beantwortung Ihrer Fragen zum Thema Trading. Kapital.com. Entdecken Sie einen Broker, der Ihre Sprache spricht. CFDs sind mit einem hohen Risiko behaftet. 70% der Anleger verlieren Geld.
The sheer scale of the destruction in Los Angeles is perhaps difficult to comprehend, and likely exacerbated by climate change. A study by climate scientists found that current conditions in areas affected by the fires have been warmer, drier, and windier compared with the past. Since the fires broke out, thousands of government workers have been deployed to contain the blazes and manage the evacuation of affected areas. But there has also been a lot of criticism, including from President-elect Donald Trump, that some fire hydrants ran dry, for example, and that cuts to the city's fire department budget have hampered the response effort, something the city's mayor, Karen Bass, disputes. But as we'll hear in our next conversation, at times the fires have been so powerful that there was little anyone could really do. I spoke to public information officer at Los Angeles County Fire Department, Christopher Thomas, and his boss, Fire Captain Sheila Kelleher. Given the circumstances, you won't be surprised to hear that the audio quality is not always brilliant, but this is what they had to say to us.
I've seen some major devastation in my career, but this is like nothing I've seen before. Infrastructure's wiped out. Families lost everything. Just that Palisades fire has the footprint of the city of Paris, if that gives you any perspective. So that'd be like Paris burning down.
Well, I've been on some large campaigns, and I travel up and down California. As part of our job, we help with mutual aid. And I've been on fires that were almost 1 million acres. But this one, it has the most homes, the most devastation, as Captain Kelleher stated, with homes and people affected.
To Chris's point, a lot of the fires we see in California are out in the brush or out in the timber. So they're yes. They're devastating fire, you know, the hillsides. And they're meant to burn at some point in their life, right? But when you wipe out full communities side by side and wipe out iconic stretches of land like the Malibu coastline that, you know, millions of families come to play and celebrate and do what they do every year, that's what takes it to this whole nother level.
The difference here also is that we're also dealing with residents who could be missing people. We're dealing with residents that don't know if their home is still standing. So we have them come into the trailer at the command post, and they're just devastated not knowing. And so we're trying to deal with them and help them, and they want to get back and see what their home is, or they want to get back into their homes. And we have to tell them that we can't let them because of their safety. Our heart just goes out to them, and it's, if you're going to talk about something difficult, we're dealing with them, trying to help them. That gets a little emotional, let's say. I actually know somebody, and her mother died in the Palisade fire. And she decided to stay, and she didn't make it through the night. And then second to that, so many people are up there or come over here that have just lost their homes. And I think they really just want to talk about it. And I'm more than willing to help them with that.
You know, I always say that being a firefighter isn't a choice. It's a calling. And I have been at busy stations my whole career where I have gone days on end with, you know, 2 or 3 hours of sleep because the mission at hand took that. So when the smoke does truly settle, then you have time to kind of unpack everything and process everything. So right now I'm in fix it mode and go mode and problem solving mode. And that's what keeps my energy and adrenaline up.
Was California ready for this, do each of you think? We've heard so much in the discourse in the last few days about what could have been done differently, who might be to blame, the lack of resources.
What I want people to understand and really grasp their arms around, just truly imagine the hurricanes that blow through or the tornadoes that blow through our land, whether it's in Florida, the Midwest, whatever. There is nothing that on our manpower, man-made, can we stop that type of wind. We can't stop it. There's nothing we can do. So when you attach fire to it,
that just brings this whole different thing. And somehow people think it's like, oh, it's fire. Just put the fire out. But you can't even have people safely in that operational zone with 70, 80, 90 mile an hour winds blowing because it's a fire rainstorm. That's truly what it is. And there's not enough water on the planet that we man-made know how to do it in that moment, in that firefight, that can shut that down. So that Palisades fire, it went out at 10:30. I was on scene 30 minutes later because I was coming over the hill, and it had grown from 10 acres to 200 acres, and then it exploded. Mm. And there's a finite amount of engines, and we have enough to cover LA. We have enough to take care of problems, and we also have enough for your typical, I don't want to say typical, there's no typical, but your additional emergencies, like the flooding situation, swift water rescue, red flag warnings that are within the 40 mile an hour range. Those things we have ready and we have deployed, and they're pre-positioned. And this is once in a lifetime catastrophic wind event that is just beyond. So I guess I want people to understand that's what we're doing. And then we've decided to build into these urban wildland interfaces that are truly meant to be deserty, and they're beautiful. And all of a sudden it's just like, well, how come you can't stop? And it's like, you know, and that's the hardest thing for a firefighter to say, is because all we want to do is fix it, stop it. But really put in perspective that wind. Now here we are in red flag conditions, and we're handling what nature's throwing at us. We're ready. We're taking care of these ridges that are flaring up. We've got everybody in position. So it's a tough one, you know, it's a tough one. I hope that makes sense.
It totally does. And that's the point, isn't it? That if there are buildings in some parts where, as you say, if it sets fire, there's not a lot you could do, especially in these conditions, to put it out. How do you not just sink into a feeling of helplessness watching all of that?
Because we know that, you know, we are going to get the upper hand. We know that we don't just give up. And the other perspective is, a normal fire starting in wildland, just, you know, we can catch those first few. Like, again, if the winds are not over that 60, 70 mile an hour, remember, the helicopters can't even fly and help us support that because it's too dangerous for the helicopters and the aircraft to fly. So that should tell people that's catastrophic right there. But just to give you some perspective, on a normal day, I fought hundreds and hundreds of structure fires. A structure fire when a house goes up, or a commercial building fire when a business residence go up. And a commercial fire, those businesses, we get well over 120 firefighters on one building with ladders, with tons of hose, with all the equipment necessary. And it takes us an hour, 45 minutes, 2 hours to get that fire fully extinguished. That's just for one building. Now, in these locations, we have had 1,000 at the Palisades fire burn down, and they're all burning relative at the same time, and the same with the Altadena fire. So can you, you know, do the math on that? That's 30,000 engines. No, nobody has that.
But it's just impossible. Yeah.
It's a numbers game. And so the blame game always has to come, but put perspective around it and to just see the recovery and see what we've stopped and see all the fires that we put out before they became big fires. Our agencies do an incredible job being prepared. But you can't be prepared for a tornado, hurricane, fire event, because that's truly what it felt like.
After all of this is over, we'll do an after-action report, and we'll very honestly look at what we did, what we could have done better, because we're always trying to improve on it. And she is absolutely right. And Captain Kelleher, let me tell you, if something's going sideways, you want her to show up. She knows what she's doing. She's an incredible leader. And we have a lot of people like that on this department. When things are going sideways and we have problems, she is a problem solver, as are all of us. So this kind of stuff we handle, but there's a point where, like she said, to handle this like we would handle a single building, we would need 36,000 engines on this.
But just on those compliments, Captain Kelleher, what do you make of that? Do you feel that respect from those around you?
I do, and I feel that because it's such a collaborative business we work in, and you're only as good as the people you work with, and the team knows that. And being attached to LA County Firefighter is truly a badge of honor for so many of us. No matter how hard it gets, no matter what goes on, we look to the person next to us and we know he's got my back, she's got my back, let's go. And that's because that's been passed down to me by my leaders, and I'm grateful. You know, I'm grateful that that shows, but that's because my team is there for me. So it's easy to be that person to them.
Sheila Kelleher and Christopher Thomas from the Los Angeles County Fire Department. As well as the professionals, there have also been thousands of individuals and community groups across the city and beyond giving up their time to help victims of the fires. For our final conversation, Mark Lowen spoke to Mendy and his father-in-law, Dovid, both rabbis, based in Topanga in the west of the city. Although they had to evacuate their homes, they saved religious scrolls and have been providing essential supplies to those who are still there.
When the fire started, we got evacuation orders to leave, our entire town to leave. So me, my wife, and my two young kids, we packed up in the car, and we, our family, graciously extended their welcome for us to stay by them in Westwood, in the city in LA. And we went out of there and took, you know, our most valuables and our two kids, and we left. My father-in-law could tell you all about the Torah scrolls that we saved as well.
When we got the evacuation orders, the first thing we do is we take out the Torahs because they're very valuable and very precious. So we took them out and we put it at a friend's house in the San Fernando Valley, which is the closest, I guess you can call, safe community. And then I personally went back. We always have non-perishable foods to distribute, cakes and soups and fish and other canned goods. So the only way to really to check on everybody is to drive around. And it's a large area, so you just have to drive from house to house, knock on the door, you know, and check and see if anyone needs anything. And also, just as importantly, is to encourage the people and give them, you know, some positivity.
We are the only synagogue in Topanga. We take responsibility for the entire town, and the entire town is like family to us. So when someone's hurt, it hurts for us too. So we're there for everyone. The fires came within a 5-minute drive from our house, but thankfully, the firemen are doing an amazing, amazing job, and they're really putting their life on the line, climbing in the trenches in the mountains over there just to put out the fires. But we're doing everything we can to be there for anyone. If anyone needs a shelter, we're helping them arrange a shelter. If people need food, helping them arrange, you know, make sure we deliver food to them. People in Topanga and also people who have evacuated outside Topanga, find their new address and be there for them, both physically and also whatever we could to help them, to encourage them. And also a lot of these families have young kids that have evacuated, so we're making sure to bring strollers, books, clothing, everything they need, you know, that they could feel comfortable in this crisis. Because unfortunately, we want to keep the kids in a positive state of mind with all the tragedy that's happening. We want to distract them and make sure they have what they need during this hard time.
What sense have you had in terms of the solidarity, the outbreak of solidarity that there is between people there and what you have seen? Because we've heard from plenty of people in the last few days that their first instinct is to help. I mean, you get a sense of a community really coming together.
We have an incredible, incredible community. What people are doing for each other is amazing. I've never seen our community get together in such a strong, powerful way. People are looking out for each other as if they're family. What can I do to bring you food, your house? People are looking out for each other's houses as well, because unfortunately, in the beginning, the firemen were stretched thin, and some people had to stay behind in Topanga to put out the fires with their own hoses, and they were looking out for their neighbors' houses as well to put out the fires on their neighbor's house, and staying up and fighting the fires like brave people. I've never seen this done before. Amazing. The firemen are doing an amazing job now, but in the beginning it was very hard, and people are really looking out for each other. I'm on these groups where people are saying, you know, what do we need? Whatever it is. Some people need even a cage for their kittens that they had to evacuate. Topanga, there's a lot of animals. Horses need to be evacuated. People have a lot of pets, and like, where do they have a stable? And we're connecting stables with horses, with cages, anything that they need, where it's really all being connected. Communities coming together in a strong way. And I think that's what's going to bring us forward. When this all settles down, it will be a hard, long recovery path. But I think we're going to get up back better than before with such a strong community, such will, such power, and with the grace of God.
We've experienced these type of Santa Ana wind fires that come around, you know, every year around this time and a little bit earlier, but never anything like this. This was a tremendous, you know, the scope of everything, and it really reminds us how important life is, how important our families are, how important our community is, you know, when we're faced with these huge challenges in 5 minutes, in 10 minutes. You know, a community could be gone, you know, infrastructure. People say, you know, houses are replaceable, but ultimately our dwellings are extensions of where we are. So You know, we shout out a prayer for ourselves and for our families and for our neighbors and for our communities, for people to be able to be strong and to hold on to their good spirits and to be positive.
Rabbis Dovid and Mendy, thank you to them and to all our guests this week. I'm Luke Jones. Thanks for listening to the documentary from the BBC World Service.
Hello, I'm Katia Adler, host of the Global Story podcast from the BBC. Each weekday, we break down one big news story with fresh perspectives from journalists around the world. From artificial intelligence to divisive politics tearing our societies apart. From the movements of money and markets to the human stories that touch our lives. We bring you in-depth insights from across the BBC and beyond. Listen to the Global Story wherever you get your BBC podcasts.